I'm Chance Dorland, and this is The Docket, our weekly interview program covering law and crime in San Antonio and Bexar County from ExpressNews.com. A San Antonio man pleaded guilty to killing his wife on February 21st, 2018, in what appears to have been a domestic violence situation. There's been a rash of domestic violence cases lately, and I'm joined now by Express News Courts and Crime Reporter Elizabeth Zavala to discuss this unfortunate example of that recent trend. So, Liz, great to have you back on the show as always. What can you tell me about this case? We've never discussed it here on the docket.
This is a case involving a 33-year-old man named Christian Daniel Martinez. He was charged with fatally stabbing his wife multiple times. And instead of going to trial, he pleaded guilty as part of a plea agreement that capped his sentence at 37 years. And Chance, by cap, it's my understanding that this is the maximum he received under the plea agreement with prosecutors.
So what else do we know about this case, especially why he was removed from the court? Apparently that happened.
Yes, well, it was quite the scene. But first, let me just tell you what we know about the murder charge. Martinez was 32 years old when a relative standing outside a home in the 900 block of Ware Boulevard on the south side of San Antonio saw a woman who was unresponsive inside the house. And San Antonio police at the time said that when firefighters arrived and went inside, they found a man there holding two knives. So they walked back outside and called police. And Christian Martinez was later arrested without incident. And Monica Martinez, who was 32 years old, was pronounced dead at the scene from multiple stab wounds. So fast forward to Thursday's hearing where Martinez pleaded guilty to killing her. Once Judge Catherine Torres-Stahl sentenced him, she allowed several members of the victim's family to give victim impact statements. And that's when Martinez lashed out. It became clear by what some of them said that there was violence going on in the home. But, you know, without a trial, there's a lot of information that I don't have and that was not discussed at the hearing. So other than neighbors at the scene when this happened, telling police that the home was visited quite often by police, it was apparent that there was some domestic violence issues from the victim impact statement. So once those relatives started telling Martinez what they think of him, that's when the man had an outburst that necessitated him being physically removed from the court.
So Liz, we've talked about that before, the victim impact statement. Sometimes it's just a regular part of the trial, and other times it's really something that we focus on for obvious reasons. You know, it's really poignant discussion of how the victim was affected by the crimes of the defendant. It seems like here, as you just mentioned, that's really where a lot of the story for this case occurred.
Yes, this was an interesting situation because the defendant apparently, the day before this happened, had already decided that he was going to plead guilty. So the courtroom was packed because Thursday is one of the days that Judge Torres-Stahl has a trial docket also. So once she did part of that particular docket, the sentencing hearing began. And the actual sentencing began almost immediately because, as I said, you know, he had entered his plea the afternoon before. And that's when bailiffs cleared the first two rows in court for relatives who would be making their statement.
And who all ended up speaking? I know it was more than just one person, correct?
Yes. You know, a lot of times you'll see maybe one person who will stand up and give, you know, the statement for the family. Or, you know, you might see two people. But when this particular hearing occurred for this victim impact statement, there were four groups of relatives. and took turns facing Martinez. And he was handcuffed and chained at the ankles and flanked by bailiffs. And each group went across the bar and faced Martinez and read their statements to him. Now, none of them wanted their names published by media or shown on TV, and attorneys on both sides obliged that. So when it began, a woman who described herself as Monica Martinez's sister and best friend told Christian Martinez that she hoped he couldn't sleep at night and that she would never forgive him. And she added that she hoped he would that he could have been able to get the death penalty for taking her sister's life. But, you know, Chance, that wasn't a capital murder charge. This was a plain murder charge. So next, a man describing himself as the victim's brother told Martinez that he had no feelings toward him, but he wanted the man to feel the pain he inflicted on his sister. And then some of the couple's children began to speak. And a young woman told Martinez, quote, "My mother will always live within me and my sisters," end quote. And as she spoke, Chance, her voice would get louder. And she ended by telling him, quote, "Don't ever write me or my siblings. Don't ever find us. You were never a father." So then we had another person who began to give a statement. And this man described himself as the couple's son. And he looked at Christian Martinez and said, "I will forever hate you." And he said that however many years Christian Martinez received would never be enough for what he did to his mother. And this was when the outburst happened. The last pair who got up to speak were Monica Martinez's parents, and they addressed Christian Martinez in Spanish. And first, the mother spoke, and again, she was speaking in Spanish and was addressing him, and she said her piece. But when her husband began to speak, Christian Martinez began yelling back at him and at both of them in Spanish. And that prompted the bailiff to grab Christian Martinez and essentially push him out of the courtroom and into the back holding area where they keep inmates. So the courtroom cleared out pretty quickly after that. And the family was escorted to a conference room, and later they exited out of the back, you know, away from media. So it was a very emotional scene in Judge Torresdahl's court.
Elizabeth, we obviously know how that emotional scene ended. You just, you know, kind of described what is very out of the ordinary for any type of situation in courts that you often cover. But before that happened, what was the reaction of the defendant as basically countless relatives seemed to get up and address him, and what was also out of the ordinary? As you mentioned, usually it's just one or two people speaking for the family.
You know, yes, it was, you know, I think that really when you, the judges are very flexible, and they work with victims' families a lot in this situation, you know, because when you go to court, you have to, you know, there's a certain decorum that you have to follow. You can't, you know, just, you know, participate, I guess, as proceedings are going on. So, you know, in a sense, really, it's unusual. I've never seen it before in you know, 3 or so years covering trials. But, you know, it does happen. But in this case, what was interesting to me is kind of Christian Martinez's reaction pretty much throughout the hearing. Like from the moment he entered the courtroom after the docket call, he didn't seem emotional. He didn't look upset. But, you know, this was a plea. And I guess, you know, one could say he knew how much time he faced. And with the cap of the sentence, the judge either goes for all of it or pick something a little shorter. I've seen cases where there's a plea on the table for a maximum of, say, 17 years, and the judge may sentence them for 15. But Martinez seemed rather relaxed, maybe even a little defiant. Before the sentencing, he sat in the jury box with his attorney, and he seemed almost chanced to lounge in the chair as he glanced at the courtroom gallery. And once he stood and faced those relatives, he did appear defiant, and there was no emotion shown. And, you know, on the part of his children, they were very angry, and I did not see any tears.
So as you just mentioned, Elizabeth, Christian Martinez received that max 37-year prison term. We've talked about this before, though. How long might he actually serve in jail?
Well, murder, as we've discussed, is a first-degree felony punishable by 5 to 99 years or life in prison. So because what they, you know, in these violent incidents, they usually will have something called like a 3G finding, like it's basically an affirmative finding of an assault with a deadly weapon, and in this case, the knives, because Monica Martinez was stabbed numerous times, and she died at the scene. So Christian Martinez will have to serve at least half of those 37 years before he's eligible for parole. And as we've talked about before, eligibility does not mean that parole is going to be a sure thing. He'll have to go before the parole board. And, you know, relatives of victims pay attention to those things. They can write letters. They can call people, depending upon how serious they are about really wanting to keep tabs on this. So, you know, he'll have to serve half of that. But there was also some mention in court that Christian Martinez has also a federal case. And it's possible that something that is going on with that might make his time in prison a little longer. Or, you know, again, he could be eligible for parole in half of that time.
Now, Elizabeth, we've got some extra time with today's episode. If you're able to, I'd like to hear an update. I know that there's a case we talked about recently, and there's been some changes that we can discuss.
Yes, Chance. A few episodes ago, we talked about a 14-year-old boy who is accused of capital murder in the deaths of a woman and her pregnant daughter, in which the baby died after 3 days. So there was another hearing for this boy, and we're not naming him because he is a juvenile. And these proceedings were to see if anything has changed in that the judge could release the defendant out on bond. As he did before, a couple of weeks ago, this defendant appeared with his mother, lawyers, and a probation officer. And as they did last time, this week they told Judge Arcelia Trevino, the presiding judge of the 386th Juvenile District Court, that they felt that this boy continues to be a danger to himself and others in the community. And the judge basically followed their recommendation and decided to leave him in juvenile detention. So we'll have another hearing in a few weeks to see if that status changes. And meanwhile, the boy he's 14, but he is scheduled, or he will be turning 15 in July.
Now, Elizabeth, as we wrap up today's episode, this is something that we talked about before on the podcast, as we just mentioned, and the sort of speculation at that time and what I've seen continued to be speculation as this case has been covered by the Express News is that this person may be tried as an adult. I wonder if there's any update on that. And then also, since this is a juvenile, and as you mentioned, we're not naming him due to his age, if someone is a juvenile, but then they're tried as an adult, does their name then get treated as the name of an adult? I'm wondering what that dynamic is.
Yes, actually, once a defendant, a juvenile defendant, is certified to stand trial as an adult in a criminal case, you can identify them. It's interesting and tragic all at the same time that there's actually several cases in Bexar County Juvenile District Courts where there are teenagers, in this case, 14, and then also, there's 15-year-old girl who is also in this position, same as this boy, in that she's being held, or she faces the possibility of being certified to stand trial as an adult. But sadly, we're probably going to see this 14-year-old boy and probably the girl that I mentioned be certified to stand trial as adults. It isn't unusual to certify someone as young as 14. Bexar County District Attorney Joe Gonzalez told us at the last hearing for this 14-year-old boy. He did say it doesn't happen very often, but it has happened before across the nation. And as we have discussed in these cases, juveniles who commit in this particular example of the 14-year-old accused of capital murder, when juveniles commit capital offenses like this, they face life in prison with the possibility of parole, which essentially means that they would have to serve about 60 years, because I think 60 years is considered basically a life sentence. So that's different than adults, though, who face either death or life in prison without the possibility of parole if they are charged with capital offenses. So, Chance, we'll be discussing this case and some of the other juvenile cases that will be coming up this summer in Bexar County, at Bexar County Juvenile District Court, because, as I said, sadly, there's quite a few cases of teenagers as young as 14 that are accused of committing these felony offenses that have some serious punishment penalties.
And thank you to San Antonio Express News Courts and crime reporter Elizabeth Zavala for joining me for today's episode of The Docket, our weekly interview program covering law and crime in San Antonio from expressnews.com. For the San Antonio Express News, I'm Chance Dorland.